listening to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Welcome to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the weekly radio talk show where we unwrap and reveal the secrets that successful people use, and you can too. Available at successunwrappedradio.com. My special guest this week is Brian Klemmer, a professional speaker and workshop leader for close to 30 years and founder and CEO of Klemmer & Associates, Inc., a leadership and character development company with many large and small clients. They focus on producing large bottom line change in a short period of time by shifting the values and beliefs of the people within the organization. He's also the author of the best-selling book, If How-Tos Were Enough, We'd All Be Skinny, Rich, and Happy. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate the opportunity to make a difference with your audience and your groups.
Why aren't how-tos enough?
How-tos, and I want to be clear that by saying not enough, it's not that how-tos aren't good, but most of a person's behavior, I like to say 99%, which is an attention grabber, startles people, but 99% of our behavior is done by belief systems we have in our subconscious, not by what we know in our head. I know most of the people that do many of the infomercials on TV with stocks, real estate, etc., and they'll tell you that 95% of the people that even purchase the systems don't ever do a deal. Don't ever do a stock deal, don't ever do a real estate deal, because they have a belief systems that prevent them from taking the action. And so we get good knowledge in our head. We read a book and we get good knowledge in our head, or we listen to a tape and it's in our head or our conscious mind, but it's not in our heart or our subconscious.
How do we get those belief systems, and what's the solution to overcoming them?
Great question. First part, how do we get them, is we learn as we live life. We see other people do things and we have an emotional experience reinforced by repetition. And so we get beliefs about money. You can have a belief that you don't deserve money, or that you can't have money and be spiritual. You can get a belief that responsibility is heavy, and then you avoid responsibility, or you get a belief it's almost like the movie The Matrix. You live these experiences and see things growing up, and you get a belief about how you are, the world is, and then you start fitting everything into that box. Now, the way that we change them is really the same way as we got them. It's through repetition and emotional involvement. And the key is that it's like a balance scale. If you have a lot of emotion, you need very little repetition to change, meaning if you have a lot of emotion, you can change very quickly. On the other hand, if you don't have much emotion, you need a ton of repetition. So you may have heard the phrase, it takes 21 days to change a habit. I personally don't believe that, because I've had habits I've tried way longer than 21 days to change, and I've had other habits I've changed much faster than 21 days, and it seems to me that it's the amount of emotion involved. An example for the listeners might be if they ever go to a health club, a workout, Gold's Gym, Nautilus Fitness Center type thing, if you ask them how many people enrolled at the beginning of the year, then ask them, okay, after 3 months, how many are still there? An enormous amount of people have used the club but quit. And 21 days is a lot shorter than 3 months. So if 21 days changed a habit, how could that work? Well, the problem is that there's not much emotion in working out. There's some, but not a lot. And so it takes a lot longer than 21 days. It takes months, if not years, to form a habit in that arena. On the other hand, if somebody has an emotional experience, and it doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative, they could have a negative experience like a heart attack, very emotional, doesn't take as many heart attacks before they're establishing this habit of working out. Although even then, I've been with people, you may have too, that have had heart attacks or something traumatic like that, and within days they're putting fatty food in their face or smoking a cigarette, and the clue there is it takes a tremendous amount of commitment to change. Change is not an easy thing.
Yeah, so part of the reason why the how-tos don't work could be just because people are not focused on that commitment, and maybe they don't even apply it for the 21 days to find out if they can change it.
Very true. I mean, I tell people what you want is irrelevant, which is counter to what they hear with most motivational speakers. There's thousands of people, whatever town you live in, that want intimate, successful, fun relationships and go to bed lonely. There's thousands of people, whatever town you live in, that they just want to not struggle making money or paying the bills, and yet they still struggle. So if people want to not procrastinate, they still procrastinate. So what they want is really irrelevant. It's what they have in their heart that is going to determine the actions they take, which is going to determine the results they get.
What's the formula of champions?
Oh, this is a brilliant. I mean, I was taught it by another gentleman named Tom years ago, and the formula of champions is a version of what we have just talked about. It's a belief system, very different than what most people are used to, and it's about a three-hour process. In fact, I believe we're going to be in Toronto on October 10th at the Ramada Hotel doing a one-night workshop on this topic. The formula goes like this, and it's to be used anytime you have a problem you don't know how to solve. I mean, I took a person recently, they bought an $830,000 house when they had no money. They didn't know how to come up with a down payment. When you say to yourself, I don't know what to do, all you're really saying is that your conscious mind doesn't know what to do. There's a lot more to a human being than their conscious mind. You have your subconscious, and you have whatever you want to call God or infinite. And when you use the subconscious and God, you can overcome incredible things that the solutions are not logical or reasonable. And the way the formula works is intention plus mechanism equals result. And by itself, that, you know, person can memorize that, they have it in their conscious mind, but it usually doesn't do much good till they have it in their heart. Now, I define intention not as what you want to do, not what you're planning to do, not what you'd like to do. Intention is your deepest commitment. And then mechanism is the how-to, the way, the process, whatever you want to call the mechanism or how-to, and then result is what you get. Now, typically when I'll do this live with people, one of the things that I'll do, I like to do things very interactive because then people experience things instead of getting in their head. I'll have everybody on one side of the room, and I'll have them all go across the room using a different mechanism, and people cheering, clapping. It's kind of fun in the beginning. You know, somebody skips across. Well, that mechanism's done. Somebody else crawls across. That mechanism's done. They have to use a different mechanism if they're going to do it. And they don't have to do anything in our workshops, but if they want to, and usually they're having a lot of fun. People are cheering. Eventually, somebody will get stuck. This happened the other night. They were about the 100th person to go across. They got stuck. They stood there and said, just can't think of anything to do. My mind's a blank. I said, not a problem. I pulled $100 out of my pocket, and I said, you know what? If you can think of a mechanism nobody's thought of yet to get across the room, in 30 seconds when I stop talking, I'll give you this $100. And if you don't, not a problem, but I'm going to put the $100 back in my wallet. Well, I didn't even get done talking, and they started picking their nose or whatever and as a new mechanism to get across the room. And that mechanism seemed to come out of the thin air. It came out of the blue. Well, it wasn't out of the blue. They got their intention clear, and a mechanism appeared. And so we teach people to focus on intention instead of focusing on mechanism. Most people, they're all worried about how to. Well, if you think with me about doing the exercise I just verbalized, there's an infinite number of ways across a room, thousands of ways across a room. I'll even toy with people sometimes and say, do it with only one arm and one leg. Do it with no legs. In the beginning, they get stuck again. Oh, there's no way to get across. Somebody's already rolled. There's no other way not to use legs. And then somebody will low crawl, and somebody will drag their posterior across. They get that there's an infinite number of ways to do anything, so quit worrying about it. But most of us have a scarcity belief system, and so we think there's only one or two ways. And you can actually focus on intention and use intention to create a mechanism. I just blew through a three-hour process there, but I didn't want to overwhelm people on the that are just listening to this interview here. But it's a fascinating mindset that I've built my personal life around, my business around, that has, without exaggeration, made me millions.
So if anyone listening wants to make a quick $100 and they're going to the seminar, all they have to do is say, Brian, I can't think of another way.
Oh, you're so quick, Heather.
So You're right. A lot of the people that I talk about the law of attraction, and the first step is to know what you want rather than what you don't want. So you're saying that there's a key missing there, which is not just to know what you want, but to actually have an intention of achieving it?
Yes. The clarity of intention alone of what you were just talking about is important. Salespeople, they never stop and think, is my intention to inform people? Is my intention to actually get somebody to use the product? Those are two way different intentions. People go to meetings all the time. There's companies that have paid us six figures just to solve this problem with their meetings, because they have meetings where nothing gets done. Well, do people at the meetings want to get something done? Sure. But they might have an intention like a deepest commitment. Even though they want to get something done, their deepest commitment is to be in control of the meeting or to not upset anybody, or and with that deeper commitment, they don't get anything done, even though they want to get something done, and they waste the limited amount of time they have. So clarity of intention. If you're talking to your child, before you open your mouth, you just think about, what's really my intention here? Is it to be in control of my child? Is it to be more intimate with my child? And you'll always know your true intention by what you produce, the result. Fanatic's a bad word, but I'm a fanatic on, there's no fair way to gauge anything than by results. Often harsh, always fair. And that's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, but that's the true reflection of intention, is the results that we produce. You kind of reverse engineer things. There's an old line, as a man or woman thinketh in their heart, so are they. So you look at the results you have in your life and say, what deep-seated thinking do I have that generated this feeling, this behavior, this result? And it's an eye-opener, but it has to be the biggest intention wins. So you can have a conflicting intention like, I want to lose weight, but I don't want to be disciplined. That's a conflicting intention. I want to enroll somebody into my business opportunity, but I don't want to appear pushy. Those are conflicting intentions. And the bigger one is always going to win. And so you don't have to be a psychologist and figure out what my conflicting intentions are, but you do have to have the clarity and the intensity of your intention higher than any possible conflicting intention. And there's some, if you want me to take the time, there's some specific things that a person can do to increase that intensity.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to ask you next, besides having someone dangle a $100 bill in front of your face, of course.
That's many times the rewards in life and the prices in life are hidden. And so, yeah, making it obvious like that really helps. Here's two or three ways, at least, that a person can do, like if they want to lose weight, but they have a conflicting intention that's deeper, and how do they know that? Because they haven't lost weight. Or they want to double their income, and they, or they want to buy a house, and they don't have the money. The number one way to raise your intention to whatever you want is put yourself at risk. Put yourself at risk. Second way, and then I'll explain each of these, second way is to make promises. And then the third way is visualization. Now, the first way of putting yourself at risk, person wants to lose 20 pounds, that's fine, but if they haven't lost the weight, they have some kind of a conflicting intention, whether it's, gosh, if I lose the weight, I may be more sexually attractive to people, and that may cause problems I don't want, and so unconsciously then they leave the weight on, or they don't feel they're worthy of a certain weight, or whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. They have this conflicting intention. Well, if they put themselves at risk, I'll be in a seminar, and I'll ask somebody, hey, write out a $500 check, give it to the person next to you, and tell them they get to give it to the political party you hate if you don't lose the 20 pounds in 2 months or 3 months or whatever the goal is. And sometimes the person will go back and say, no, I'm not going to do that. And that's okay, but then you know they really don't have an intention to lose weight. They'd like to, but it's not a clear intent. And it also may not be risky. Maybe they don't, they're wealthy, they don't really care about $500, or politics doesn't matter to them. But if they kind of grimace in their stomach and they go, okay, I'll do it, and they're not doing it to peer pressure, because I have to even clarify when I'm doing this seminar. Hey, are you doing it out of the peer pressure of the moment because everybody's looking at you, or is it because you really want to lose the weight? And sometimes they'll go, gosh, I'm just doing it because of the peer pressure. And I say, no good. I'm a CEO of a company, and my employees many times, quite frankly, will give me goals, but they're giving me goals with an intention to be liked by me, not with an intention of producing. So I have an obligation as a leader to assist them, support them in clarifying their intention. And when I put my employees then at risk, ooh, now they tell me the truth about what their real intention is. And that's important to me as a CEO, because otherwise it's like I'm trying to fly a plane with faulty instrument readings. So putting yourself at risk, and risk is different for different people. And obviously I'm not talking about jumping off a bridge or doing something silly or stupid or foolish like that. I'm talking something that puts your stomach in a knot, but you know, you're not going to get injured or anything like that. And then the second thing is make promises. You know, if a person, I don't want to keep losing weight, I could say, you know, they're in sales and they just, you know, one-on-one sales, whatever kind of sale it is. And they go to a 10-year-old child they have and say, hey, Johnny, hey, Sally, what do you want when I make my goal of selling 3 widgets at the end of the month? Half the kids would fall over. They'd say, I'd get something. And the parent could go, yeah, you get something. We're a team, family's team. On a sports team, somebody's job is to kick the ball in a net, and somebody else's job to keep the ball out of the net, and they're on the same team. That's 2 different jobs, same team. My job is to sell. Your job's to be supportive of me. What do you want? You agree on something. Okay, you sell 3 widgets, and I get a PlayStation, or we get to go to Disneyland. Great, let's shake on it. I'm telling you, there's no way. I don't care if the company doubles the price. I don't care if economy goes down. There's no way that you'll look Johnny or Sally in the eye at the end of the month and go, you don't get to go to Disneyland or you don't get the PlayStation because I only sold 2 widgets instead of 3. Your voice will change. You'll attract people into your life that weren't there before. You'll move heaven and earth to sell those 3 widgets. But most people, they won't do what I'm telling you. I'm giving you how-to right here on how to make things happen you don't know how to make happen. It's literally, as I said, I'm not trying to brag, but it's made me millions, and yet people won't do it, even though I'm telling them the how-to, because they're addicted to comfort. Comfort's a drug, no different than alcohol or illegal drugs, and people become addicted to it. They sell out on what really matters to them just to be comfortable. And so even though I'm telling them, they won't take their kid and do what I'm telling you to do. They won't make a promise to another human being. They won't put themselves at risk. Then the third way to increase your intention is visualization. And a lot of people have talked about visualization. You know, it's kind of thrown around a lot. And I don't find visualization as powerful as the other two, but it is the language of our subconscious. And what putting yourself at risk does is activate this intention, you know, from the subconscious in God. And so that's really, visualization is also a valuable tool in that arena, because it's the subconscious does not work with language words, it works with pictures.
What's the difference between visualization and imagination?
It's another great question. Visualization is when we reproduce a picture in our minds of something that we've already seen. If I asked you to look at the carpet that's in front of you and you look at it for 20 seconds, and I say, now close your eyes and visualize that carpet, that's visualization. Now, you may not do a very good job. Maybe the carpet's brown, and so you just kind of see something like chocolate in your brain. But whether you do it well or poorly, you're reproducing a picture of something you've already seen. That's visualization. And many people use imagination and visualization interchangeably, but they are different. Imagination is when you produce a picture in your mind that you've never seen before. So if I tell you to imagine a chocolate carpet, assuming you've never seen a chocolate carpet, and your mind starts making up pictures, you know, oh, it's got indentation marks, and it's got this, and it's got threads of chocolate, and blah, 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 and oh, there's white chocolate and brown chocolate, and now you're using imagination because presumably you've never seen that before, and you're simply imagining what that might look like. That's the difference between imagination and visualization.
Okay. Why are before and after pictures a key to good visualization?
Many different reasons, before and after. There's an old adage, Stephen Covey made it popular years ago, about always start with the end in mind. Our subconscious is going to produce whatever picture it's seeing. And unfortunately, most people see the picture that reality feeds them. So if you live in a certain kind of house, then you imagine that's what you are. If you run a company, or you have a job and you earn a certain amount of money, then the subconscious is seeing you as a person that makes that amount of money. If the subconscious is going to create a different amount of money in your life, it has to see a different picture. The problem is that by its very nature is uncomfortable. If you're making $50,000 a year and you want to make $150,000 a year, to see that picture, the subconscious resists that in the beginning. And you kind of go, wow, that's not true. And it's almost like a thermostat readjusts a room temperature back to what the thermostat is. So you have to reset the thermostat for $150,000 before the subconscious will buy into it. And again, with repetition, you can do that, or with emotional experiences. That will alter the picture that you have in your subconscious.
To get $10 off the cost of attending Brian's Champions Workshop in Toronto on Tuesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. and pay only $15 instead of $25, just call 416-865-3274. That's 416-865-3274. And tell them you heard it on Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail. Or to find out about Brian's other programs, just go to klemmer.com, K-L-E-M-M-E-R.com. And I hope you've enjoyed the first segment of our interview. But it's not over. There's a full 200% more than what you just heard, where we delve deeper into these success principles. To unwrap the full interview and get lots more tools for success, just sign up to become a Success Unwrapped member on any level you choose at successunwrapped.com/members.
This has been Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Be sure to tune in to the next edition of Success Unwrapped, helping you to unwrap and discover your own potential for success. Until next time, keep unwrapping. I'm Heather Vail. This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network at blueberry.com. That's spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y.com.